Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sun bounces on the swell, waves breaking on red-hot sand, surfboards dry, leaning on the wall of the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Oh, Dan. Dan, how's things?
Very good, thanks, Robbie.
Very good.
Very good.
Yeah. It surprises me. But yeah. Why so good?
I'm building an extension on my Correct Realm flat.
Are you?
Yeah.
Can you build an extension off flat? Don't you need
it? Yeah.
So just out
I'm
the side
doing it myself.
You're on the ninth floor, though. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Out the side?
Scaffolding.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Neighbours fine with that?
They seem to be all right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, just put an extra room in.
Done anything this week?
No, that's mainly been it. I've been doing the scaffolding because I haven't done that before.
Okay.
It's quite a big learning curve.
Still living down by the estuary?
Yes.
Love it down there, don't you?
It's a nice view down there, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah. Thank you very much for inviting me for dinner yesterday, Dan.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Time. You promised me you would give me your souffle recipe. So, what was it? Just talk me through ingredients and method.
Yeah. Which was the souffle? Was it the cheese souffle?
No, plain.
Plain.
You said it was your yeah. The recipe you've perfected the most, really.
Yeah. Well, it's. I can give you the recipe, but it's practice essentially. But
let's just give you the recipe though.
It's eggs.
Yep.
Yep. You need to separate the yolk and the white. Okay. Do you know how you do that?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
I don't know how I do it.
How do you do it?
I do it with a shell. I tip the shell and that and put it in like that.
Yeah. You need to get an empty plastic water bottle. So you crack the egg, put it into a bowl, get your empty plastic water bottle, and you suck the yolk out, and then you have no problems at all.
You suck the yolk out?
You suck the yolk out. You kind of use it as sort of a syringe. So you press the bottle next to the yolk.
Right.
Let go, and it just
okay.
sucks the yolk and leaves the white.
Yeah. Right. So what's next?
Then you need to whisk.
Yep.
Yep. Soft peaks.
Yep.
Yep. And then straight in the oven.
That's it.
Yeah,
just eggs.
It. Yeah.
No other. I mean, it was like no other souffle I've had before.
There's
nothing else in it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Surprised me that. I mean,
yeah.
It's not a traditional souffle. I mean, a lot of them have like flour and stuff, don't they? In them, really.
Yeah, but it's got to be gluten free, isn't it?
Okay. Well, I'd love to talk more about this, but look out into the distance there, Dan. Who is that marching firmly towards the moon underwater?
Do you see?
I can. I think it might be the actor, comedian, writer and rapper, Ben Baileysmith. Ben, how are you?
Hi,
welcome.
Thank
a lot
you.
Of jobs, haven't you?
I have. I have a couple of questions. One is the roasted egg whites. That's what that is, right?
It, yeah.
Just roasted egg white.
Yeah.
That's Yeah. That constitutes what? That's a starter?
It's a souffle, apparently, yeah.
But well, you have to use a lot of egg whites if you want it to be a main course.
It's just egg white. Yeah. So a pinch of salt, no?
Yeah. Well, obviously.
Well, you didn't mention that.
But all he said was egg white.
Just egg whites and in the oven.
And then I pictured just a fridge or something, or a cupboard full of yolks.
It sounded a bit meringue.
What are you doing with all those? Oh, it's plastic, an Evian bottle packed with yolks.
Yeah. So you don't have any ingredients you've just got.
It's like when you see a fetus in a bottle in a sci-fi.
It's like a horror film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then secondly, that might not be your only issue, because it doesn't sound like you got planning permission on that extension you're doing. And now we have your name and a recording.
Yeah.
Which will be timestamped.
Yeah.
For the land rights case that is surely coming your way from these neighbours who claim to have no issue.
Like all rich people, I prefer to pay a fine rather than a fee.
When did you get rich?
Nice. Yeah.
When did you get rich? When was that?
That's what they call throwaway money.
Yeah.
So there's like a guy parked outside this building on a very narrow street, double yellow lines, central London.
Yeah.
I just walked up. He's just got PCM right on the window. Yeah. I don't think he gives a shit. No. Doesn't give a shit, does he?
Buy a new car.
Yeah.
Leave that one. Get a new one.
It's throwaway money.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Maybe that's Dan's car.
It might be.
I did lose a car the other week, so it might be.
You lost the car?
Yeah.
Not many people lose cars. Yeah. I can think of Jermaine Pennant
is the one that springs to mind.
And you.
Yeah.
This is such an interesting window.
It is.
Into the mind of a man.
Yeah.
He's got an Evian bottle full of egg yolks, a lost car, and a criminal enterprise going on in extending buildings without planning permission.
He's a renegade.
Doesn't give a fuck.
Doesn't play by the rules of society.
It's like the Trump of podcasting.
Yes, in many ways, and in political views as well. Yeah.
Listening to the show, I just never would have thought.
No, you wouldn't, would you? But there's a lot.
There's a malevolent presence at this table.
There's layers to Dan.
Still,
they're not all good.
Deep, you know
they're not all good. Yeah. They're not all good. But how was your journey here today through the rounds?
Well, cycled. That's what I always do. Which is mad, because as we were saying off mic, I have Raynaud's. So it's a mad thing to do, to cycle in the cold.
So that is what we were discussing beforehand. But for people who don't know,
it's basically like an extreme and quick loss of blood to your digits, so toes and fingertips. So I will like temporarily lose my fine motor skills. Like I was saying to you, I had trouble unzipping my jacket.
But it could take
a like 20 minutes of like extreme warmth to get back to normal. So it's like one of these weird things that I'm not going to die from it. It's not life threatening. It's super annoying.
Yeah.
But you can't really moan about it. There's shit going on in the world.
Yeah. Are there any other famous Raynaud sufferers?
I'll tell you what, Andy Burrows, who wrote America for Razorlight.
Yeah.
Big Raynaud sufferer.
He's a drummer as well, isn't he? So he must have his fingers out all the time.
But, in a beautiful turn of events, you know, when the universe gives back, the speed with which he has to use those digits is a great way of keeping them.
Yeah.
Great way of keeping them warm.
Yeah.
You know. I have that scene from The Untouchables where Sean Connery is telling them how to keep warm. That's like imprinted on my brain. Just goes round and round. Yeah. Fingers under the armpits. Stamp your feet. Mm. You know? Wait for the Mounties.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully the studio here is the correct temperature.
It's lovely. It's perfect temp.
Mm. Wonderful. Wonderful to hear.
Studio?
The pub. But yeah, I mean, that we're in
the studio room.
We're
in the nook.
This area of the moon underwater.
Yeah.
Which constantly metamorphosizes into different spaces depending on the needs of us. Where did you talk pubs, Ben? In your early days, what were the
I suppose early days would have had to have been Kilburn.
Yeah.
And pubs in Kilburn are, it's the most polite way to say this, hit and miss.
Yeah. Mm. I love Irish bars, aren't they?
Well, traditionally Irish area. You know, when I was growing up, there was still like, you could still see the imprints of, it was a big Jewish area. I think up until maybe even the 30s, you still see imprints of that. Like my favorite bakery was a Jewish place called Grudzinski's, which you still see those around, but more like Stamford Hill.
And, yeah.
You know, Hasidic areas and stuff like that. But by the time you're getting into the 60s, you've got this new wave of Irish money that's like over time has made a big difference. So initially you would have just had laborers largely, you know, who are working almost, not exclusively, but almost exclusively on house renovation, driveways, paving, all sorts of things, roofs. And then as there's that flight of white English and Jewish, there's houses that are coming up on the market relatively cheap. And then you've got a generation of guys who've been saving up that money. Yeah. And they're starting to buy up flats and houses in Kilburn. The important thing about that is with the Windrush and then the following 10 years of like mass emigration from the Caribbean islands, you've got these pockets that popped up around the UK that are still, you know, they'll be famous to this day for, you know, a large Caribbean presence, say St. Paul's in Bristol, something like that, you know. In Kilburn, that contingency were kind of fortunate because they were, what they were finding in landlords were people who were like, listen, if you've got cash, then let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in a lot of other places, it'd be like, I don't care what money you've got.
Yeah.
There's no blacks here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that began an interesting sort of love affair, metaphorically and literally, between the Caribbeans and the Irish.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is something that's always fascinated me. So like Irish pubs were not a no-go place for black families at all. Or mixed families. And obviously there was a lot of mixed families that were half and half anyway. Mm. But some of the spots, of course, pubs struggle and they go to a sort of rack and ruin. They just become depressing places. And Kilburn's never been upwardly mobile. It's the same. The high road's pretty much the same as it was in the 80s, which in London terms is just unheard of.
Yeah.
But actually there's less good venues and less good pubs there now than there was back in the 80s and even the early 90s. You think like the musical venues that were there, which are also great places to drink, like the National. I mean, fucking Nirvana played the National, 91. Do you know what I mean? The state building, what's it called? The Gaumont. The Gaumont, it used to be called, it was a big cinema. You know, Beatles played there. Mm. Then there was the Luminaire, where a lot of the sort of up and coming indie bands
that
might have been in Sean Keaveney's fanzine. Some of them would have, some of them would have played there. But yeah, they're all gone and they're all like just depressing things like bookies or just, you know, budget casinos, bingos, or like churches that you have to pay to go to.
Is that a thing?
I just left a pause there so you can snip that out if it's controversial. But yes, there's some holding on that are just fucking great. Colin Campbell. Big shout out to the Colin Campbell, which is sort of opposite the old theatre, which used to be the Tricycles, now the Kiln. It's a great booze. I love going in there. But a lot of people would walk past it, you know, especially if you're like Dan's sort of world, you know, the mega wealthy, the oil 1%. Barons.
Yeah.
You know, the 1%ers out here who just do what the fuck they want. No. You know what I mean? Like cool kids, trendy young people, they might just walk straight past and go, I'm not going in there. Even like people you consider your friends, they go, this place.
Yeah.
Because from the outside looking in, at a glance, you might think, oh, it's one of those shitholes. It's going to be just a sad old Irish man in there drinking his last day. Not at all, man. It's got that beauty. You know when they keep so many of the original features?
Yeah.
Dark green tiling and, you know, there's a coziness to it that's just really special. The smoking area, though, is like a patch under a stairwell that you could fit three people in standing up. It's brilliant. It's got a smoking area. Oh my God.
I do love a pub that you don't know. If you don't look too closely, you couldn't tell which decade you're in.
Yeah, that's the Campbell.
I was in a pub in Wakefield on Monday and called the Black Rock, I think it was. And apart from a no vaping sign, if you'd said you're in the 80s sort of thing, you could totally believe it. There was Tetley on tap.
That's kind of special. I get nostalgic about pubs, and but I also love to see like a new pub doing something that feels within the pub tradition. So I don't mean like retro, but I mean like they recognize that it's still a public house.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You go in some pubs and you just don't feel comfortable because you've got to stand and wait to be seated or like there's no attention to, I don't know, there's like five delivery guys in front of you or something picking up pizza. And, do you know what I'm saying?
Just
like, is this a pub?
Right. Right, you get two choices on draft, Ben. What's your first option?
Yeah, it's so lame, right? But
no, it's your
I love
it's
beer.
Lame.
Okay, yeah. I love beer. And I like it to that point where when all these newfangled beers started coming in, when would you say like the sort of craft beer like explosion, like, do you know what I mean?
Mid-2010s.
Yeah. And I was on board. Like, I think the first beer was the Californian one. What's it called? Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
And that was then I was in and I would try all these different, like, you know, Camden Pale Ale, whatever. And then one day it was literally like, I drank one, I can't remember which brand it was, but one of these big craft beer brands. And I was like, that tastes like a fucking liquid soap. What have I've been wasting the past 2 years?
Yeah.
It's disgusting. Yeah. Like literally in a second, I was like, I never want to drink any of that stuff again.
Yeah.
And I had a Stella and I was like, why did I overthink things?
Yeah.
It's just a great beer. Mm. I love a Stella on draft.
Stella first pick. It's a popular pick, the Stella.
I mean, actually. I'm sure it's not niche. I know it's not niche, but like within this podcast, or not listen to all the episodes, I'm sure it's not niche in that respect, but if you want the honest answer, like a Coors Stella,
I love a Coors Light. I think there's no shame. No,
there's problems with that.
No, there's not.
That's problematic.
There's not. I'm telling you, blind tasting, you have a Coors Light, it is the perfect sessioning lager.
Every time he says that, it gets the exact reaction that you gave. Yeah. Like, no one else has sat there and gone,
an American
beer. So nice.
Yeah, well, I'm not a... But we're not xenophobe.
No,
I'm not a xenophobe, of course, because I drink Stella Artois. Like, I just think there's like so many countries that have nailed beer. By the way, we're not one of them.
No.
What's a great English lager?
Yeah.
Lager-wise, yeah.
What is
Carling?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Is that what we're talking about here?
It's good craft lagers.
That's what I'm saying. It's a craft thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing that we are good at. Like I say, I hate them. Think they taste like fairy liquid. Mm. But it's just me. Very good crushed Palmer violets.
Do you enjoy the chalice the chalice style glass you get with the Stella these days?
Not particularly.
Would you rather have it in a traditional pint glass?
Although with the Reynard, sometimes it's good to have a stem to hold rather than the freezing cold outside of the glass.
Well, with your fingers.
I love a Camden Hells, but I don't want the chubby stubby thing.
Like, oh, I like the chubby stubby.
You like
thing.
The chubby stubby?
Yeah.
I like it when it's a half pint because it's quite cute.
Yeah, it's very cute, that.
It's like a little Oompa Loompa.
It's very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like a pint. I'd like a pint glass that's as wide as it is tall. I'd like a
weird one of those.
Yeah. What Stella facts have you got for us, Dan?
Well,
we've done
a lot of sort of Stella facts. You know, it's a very old beer. It's, you know, Stella Artois, you know, it means star. It's the Stella Artois logo is possibly the oldest logo in the world, and the horns reference the Den Horn Brewery, which was opened in 1366.
When you say the oldest logo, beer logo or all logos?
All logos.
Monks?
Really?
Yeah. Are monks involved?
Yeah.
I feel like monks
probably
be
were in the old days. And it was originally Stella Artois was originally a Christmas beer they released. So they'd done other beers, and then Stella Artois in 1926 was a Christmas beer, which became a regular
line. Quick question. Yeah. Is the Artois the company, or is the Stella the company, or originally?
The Artois is the company.
And then they brought out a Christmas beer called Stella Artois.
Yes, I think that's correct.
You. And the star was, so the star was kind of festive initially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
But one new thing that I found out, which I didn't know before, was that have to take with a pinch of salt because it comes from an advertising agency. For some reason in Argentina, I don't really understand why that is. But they said we've got this great rich history of Stella beer, right? Artois beer, right?
Mm.
Going back centuries. And so they said, great old European paintings, you know, those old paintings where people are in pubs and kind of clinking glasses and there's beer going everywhere. They said, I wonder how many of them they might be drinking, you know, one of their lagers, right?
We're talking about product placement.
In fine art.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never even considered
that. It's brilliant.
So, they've had an agency that would get you in the new Monet and stuff.
Van Gogh wouldn't have died penniless, miserable with one ear if he'd have, you know. Just,
yeah.
He just didn't want to sell out. That was the problem.
Edvard Munch, the guy screaming, but with like frothing.
With this new Samsung phone.
But they developed a thing called the Artois probability, and they took different paintings and they looked at what kind of glass it was, what year it was, where who painted it, where they were likely to be, where that bar might have been, how much froth there was, and all that kind of thing. Wow. I mean, I'm sure it's all nonsense. The color of the liquid. And they cross-referenced that data with the brand's extensive historical records, and then they released a load of adverts with, like, an old picture from like the 16th century with 86% chance of this being.
I mean, it's there's so many apocryphal elements to it, but potentially apocryphal.
Mm.
But at the same time, there's no reason not to believe it.
Yeah,
because like, why wouldn't you? If you and what a great way to sort of, I don't know, retrofit. Yeah. Advertising.
Yeah.
Okay, Stella is in the pub. What's your other draft option?
Hell's still fit. Hell, draft Hell's is so noticeably better than a canned Hell's.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I wonder if that's the thing that makes it, makes you know it's still a bit of an upstart.
Yeah.
Because a cold bottle of Peroni is banging. Oh, yeah. And then a draft Peroni is just amazing. So I think for longevity and respect, like the newfound additional respect I've got for the good people at Artois, I would probably go for Peroni.
Okay.
Hell's will maybe be in that position in 100 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Reason I'm picking Peroni over Hell's as well is because when did Hell's get so fucking expensive? Like sometimes I'm in fucking Camden. Yeah. Like, how far has this had to travel?
I can get it myself. It's cheaper.
You just put it in the barrel and like kicked it and it would have rolled down the road to the fucking pub I'm in. And I'm paying like £7.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
So no. Yeah. And actually Peroni can be really like jarringly expensive too. But what's the brand that says reassuringly expensive?
That is Stella.
Stella, isn't it? Yeah. But Stella's cheaper than a Peroni.
Yeah.
So cheaper. Stella's number one. But a Peroni though, treat myself. Ooh.
Do you know what? You want to get yourself to this pub in Wakefield. Because it was I got a pint, a soft drink, my friend, and
is this
a bag of crisps.
Is that near Sheffield?
Yeah, Leedsy Way, I think.
Leedsy Way.
And it was I reckon, a fiver sort of thing for two drinks and some crisps.
Oh, mate.
Unbelievable.
No,
anyway.
I miss all those prices. Any time I've been on a job up there, it's just like one of the like absolute treats at the end of the day, going to a pub and paying like a normal price instead of a psychotic amount.
Yeah, like a random number.
Where I can't
generator.
Get me and my friend a drink with a fucking £10 note.
No, that's gone out the window a long time ago, isn't it?
Outrageous though. Still angry.
Yeah. Peroni, what do we know, Dan?
Set up in 1846 by Francesco Peroni. It was a brewery in Vigevano.
Vigevano. I don't know what you're saying or in what context.
It's a town in northern Italy. That's where the brewery was. And he called it Birra Peroni then. Yeah. And it was Nastro Zero, which is the one that we enjoy drinking at bottles.
So that's a type of Peroni, is that
what you're saying? That was created specifically for export in 1963. So until then, although it was very popular in Italy, it was the biggest brewer in Italy. That was the one that they created for export.
So if I was in Rome right now and I ordered a Peroni, chances are it'd be different.
It probably would be.
Peroni feels like it's something that's become popular in our lifetimes. Like, you know what I mean? It didn't feel like it was always there. Like Stella was always there when I was a kid, sort of thing. It was always around. Whereas I don't really remember Peroni being feeling new. Does that make sense?
Do you ever see photos of yourself with a can of Stella from the 90s? Mad, isn't it? It's all like flat. It's like, I know it's obviously cylindrical, but do you know what I mean? Like the top and the bottom's like perfectly flat, and then it's got the old ring pull where the ones you used to kill
comes off,
humans or animals.
Yeah.
That was a no-brainer, wasn't it? When you woke up and they were like, oh, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
You're like, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Did you used to do the thing with those ring pulls? Sometimes the circular bit of it had two little holes at the bottom.
Yes.
You could separate the ring pull.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then you'd put the you'd put the flat bit of the ring pool inside one of those holes and you'd be able to flick the thing like a frisbee and it would fly off.
Yeah, that's one element that I maybe do miss a little bit.
Do you know what I miss? You know, you used to get, if you bought like a 4-pack of beers or something like that, you'd get the plastic thing that they took away because it could kill dolphins and stuff. Yeah. But what we would do sometimes is, if you had four of you drinking, you've got four of these cans somewhere, your hand through each one of these holes, right?
Yeah,
this is so dumb.
No. Listen, this is a good system, right? Okay, so say you're on a train and or somewhere that you can get access to these things,
yeah,
and there's four of you. You get the plastic thing, you all put your hand in, and you pull it apart, and the one it's stuck to has to go and get the next lot of beers.
Oh, I like it now.
It's a good system.
I do like it now.
It's a good game.
And they made us get rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean, priorities. Priorities.
Those ducks were, it's because the ducks were getting stung for having to go and get the next round each time.
Yeah.
No, the Moon Underwater does respect animal rights.
Yeah, yeah. Particularly ducks.
For my comments.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Peronian history. Very interesting as well. Thank you.
Yeah. You're always good for a little fact, aren't you, Dan? And even things that have been picked before. I mean, you are struggling on Guinness these days.
Yeah, it's quite hard to find new things to say about Guinness.
Well, keep trying.
40 people have chosen it.
Yeah. You get two bottles and or cans.
Right.
What are you going to go for your first choice?
I love a little stubby red stripe.
I love a can red stripe.
Cans are great as well.
Yeah.
But you know when there's a beer that makes you feel like you're on holiday? It's so dumb.
It's Notting Hill Carnival. Like it's beaches.
A Corona with a lime in it. Like you're like, hey, come on.
Red stripe. Red stubby, stripe is up there with
stubby red
for me.
Stripe. It's just different to everything else. So it's just got this little chubby bottle. I love it when you get the little six packs of them with the handle.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, yeah.
Red Stripe is fantastic. And it just makes... I've never had a night where I've been drinking Red Stripe that has not been fun and lovely.
It's a joyous beer.
Yeah.
And if you are drinking the stubbies, you can feel a little bit better about yourself as well because you're pacing yourself a bit more. It's a smaller...
Yeah,
I mean, if it's a hot day, they stay cold to the bottom.
Yeah.
And there's lots of things to cheer about the Red Stripe stubby. And they're very aesthetically pleasing to look at.
Mm.
They look like mini brown versions of the old milk bottles from the 80s, which I think... is another thing that lives in my nostalgia quite strongly.
Mm.
Yeah.
And of course, for you, it's got the added thing of it's almost a bit like the 1980s Crystal Palace strip.
Oh, the sash. Yeah, the sash is great. Like, I've got a green red striped t-shirt that a dude actually once wouldn't stop bartering me over. I think it was at the Bristol Carnival. There was a guy who just wouldn't stop with the money. And I was like, bro, I'm not going to lie. If we get to £100, I am going to, like, it's going to give me pause. But I would never sell the t-shirt. I just wouldn't sell the t-shirt. I've had it for like 25 years.
Yeah.
I can still just about get in it, although I can't breathe out for the day.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
ladies.
No, you know, ego is what I really mean.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's got like, it's almost like the stitching on the sleeves is on the outside. You know what I mean? Like
if you
turn a sock inside out, it's a bit like that, but on purpose. It's a pale green. And then the sash is the classic red and white across the front. I just fucking love it with the D&G logo in there, almost like a football shirt.
Yeah.
And then, of course, being Jamaican, it's just like, that t-shirt's not for sale.
No. Yeah, fair. Yeah.
But I love that you love it that much that you would, you know, keep buttering.
It's a brilliant drink. And I used to, every year when I lived in London, we'd go to Nottingham Carnival and I'd just get Red Stripe and just drink those endlessly. It was such brilliant days.
Mm.
What do we know, Dan, about Red Stripe?
Started in 1928. Huh?
Desno's and Geddes.
And but the first beer was a much heavier beer that they used to brew, and then and obviously in Jamaica that's not really what people wanted. So
it's interesting because weirdly to this day there is a penchant for stodge in food and drink in Jamaica. Mm. So you're right to say it's not what they wanted, but it's also the classic bit of both.
Mm, yeah.
Because there is still a tradition of thick, syrupy, weigh your whole body down drinks.
Yeah.
And
well, I guess
food.
You're saying the stout is...
Yes, yeah. So the Nigerian stout's a heavy one.
Mm.
There's also like roots wine, dragon stout, these sweet tonics, you know? You drink them, it's got almost the consistency of medicine, like Beecham's or something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're like, this is definitely going to get me fucked. Magnum's another very famous one, the little tiny bottles with the red lids, super high alcohol content. And then in food, you know, even with vegetables, there's you know, big love of yams and hard food, and then there's dumplings and festivals. Yeah. All these things are just super heavy, weighing you down. And some people say it's linked to the fact that you have to do a shit ton of walking in Jamaica.
Ah.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you need the energy?
Yeah. You're going to burn all that shit off.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, but anyway.
I mean, they launched a sort of more refreshing mm-hmm. lager, and that became popular, especially during the Second World War when Americans and Canadians were based there, and they loved drinking it, and that kind of spiked their sales, and so it became bigger, and then first exported to the UK in 1976.
Makes sense as well, because the culture would have started to have really sort of set for you know, if you think about 54, 55 being the tipping point of like, tipping point is the wrong word completely, but you know what I mean? That point where there was one of the largest modern influxes in terms of immigration. Within 20 years, the first of those more successful would have started to go think beyond survival and think about like, how do we survive in style?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How do we live our best possible life? And one of the most sort of direct ways to turn is in a weird way back the way you came. So you look at these things that make us feel at home.
Yeah.
How can we, you know, get a piece of that there? So I can see a market would have opened up in the 70s.
Then what's your second choice for bottle or can?
You know what? I'm quite excited to hear a bit more of Dan's history now, with all the little interesting facts, because I don't know anything about this brand other than it's Japanese, Asahi. I love a cold bottle of Asahi.
I had Asahi for a while. It's very, very distinct taste. Yeah. I had one quite recently. It's not like any other beer.
And there's a crispness to it that just cuts through. I really, really like it. Do you know when there's a shop near you where the fridge is of a very high standard?
Yeah.
It's one of those, there's a corner shop near me. It's sort of, it's classic one on the way home from the tube station kind of vibe. But their fridge is so cold and they always have Asahi. Whereas the shop up the road's got a much wider range of beer, but the fridge is shit. Never get a cold beer out of there. And you know, when it's a hot day, normally if you're buying a beer in a shop, you're taking it home, have it with dinner or whatever. But on a hot day, you might be like going to the park or something, you know. See your mates. It's so disappointing getting like four beers from a shop, tepid like beer. Out of their, I'm going to use the air quotes, fridge. And you crack the first one. He's like, this is fucking first one. Yeah. It's room temp. That's screwed.
That's not good. Yeah. And also, if you're in a shop and you reach in and you take that first beer and it feels a bit warm, and then you go, well, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to look weird if I just go, oh, I'll leave that.
I don't mind looking weird. I'll reach back in and check check all of them. Because it's not like fruit. Yeah. You know, when you see people doing that with fruit, you're like, all right, mate. Use your eyes.
Yeah.
We've all got to eat these.
I used to go to grocers in Herne Hill. They used to have signs up saying, do not squeeze the fruit. They used to get very angry about it. Yeah. And they were right. Yeah.
But also, you need an idea of whether a mango is ripe or not, or going to get ripe.
That with certain fruits, it's kind of okay.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Maybe doing it to raspberries.
You know, I think normally bananas you can tell by sight, but they're being unwrapped. I think you're right. Most people don't eat the skin of mangoes. I sometimes do. I mean, the main story here is just wash your fruit before you eat it.
Yeah. And don't
can be bad form to squeeze too hard.
Squeeze appropriately.
Squeeze appropriately.
What do we know about Asahi?
Squeeze appropriately.
Well, Asahi's, I didn't know this, but super dry, which is what we drink, I guess. Asahi super dry.
Clothes.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the clothes. They own the site.
No. Yeah. That didn't come about till 1987, so it's actually quite a recent beer. They had other beers before, but that was the first sort of super dry beer. It's a Japanese rice lager, and they kind of use sake as a sort of inspiration to make it, because they wanted something that was really crisp. Like you were saying, really crisp and clean and with a quick finish and that kind of thing. But I found this weird thing, which I read on a fairly random website, which I think this is not true, but it just made me laugh.
Okay.
Beer is drunk a little differently in Japan. I think this is an American website. Beer is drunk a little differently in Japan in that it's treated more like a soft drink than an alcoholic beverage. The Japanese enjoy their beers as a regular pairing to their meals on hot summer days at the park and even while waiting for the bullet train.
That's quite weird.
There's a lot to sort of pick apart in that statement.
Yeah.
The very first one.
Yeah.
The Japanese drink beer a little differently.
Yeah.
It's one of those sort of advertising phrases you hear quite a lot. Yeah. Here in blah, 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 we like to do things a little differently. And you watch it, you're like, it's not really that different, bro. Jack Daniels is very guilty of this, I think.
Yeah.
We like in Tennessee. It's like, mate, really? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So there's that. But then it doesn't go the way you're thinking. Yeah. Then it tells you just really basic things like, some of us like to have a beer with our meal. You're like, okay, wow, what a bizarre cultural difference that I can't get my head around. Then they just throw one that really is weird.
Yeah.
Drinking on your way to work while waiting for the train. Dude, if you see me with a bottle of beer at a train station, there can only be one reason. It has to be like all sort of eloquence, all sort of like good sort of, I don't know, a natural approach to a day out has sort of gone out the window.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm coming back from the football or
been
out on the piss with loads of guys, do you know what I mean? And then you've been drinking in the street and then suddenly you're separated from them.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I should have a beer in my hand at a train station.
Not on the way to work. Mm. No. Maybe the way they're saying it's done a little bit differently in Japan is that they're not drinking 9 pints of it like we would be in this country.
That's
maybe
the other thing that we could be taking for granted here that is a cultural difference.
Yeah.
So it is quite nice when you go to countries and beer is this thing where it's like it's in a smaller glass. Yeah. It's almost like an aperitif.
Yeah.
And you crack on. That is a lovely thing.
Mm. Particularly in hotter countries where a pipe would just get warm by the time you get to the end of it.
Then there's the other extreme where you're like in Germany and you have like those gigantic, what are they called? Flagons? I don't know.
Oh, you can't even barely lift the glass. It's not a stein.
I would never want to drink beer like that.
I went to Oktoberfest this year, and they are quite heavy. It's quite a lot of beer.
The last half a pint must be gross, no?
Yeah, well, you sort of are drinking quite a lot, and you don't really have a sense of taste by the end of it.
I can't drink that much lager, and I was watching your video of you drinking all of that, and I was thinking, I'd have one of those massive things, and I'd go, well, I can't. It's going to be a while now before I can start another one. Yeah. You lot are just going.
And then there's just the pure like bladder element.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I just wee a lot.
Yeah.
Good times.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ben, you write books amongst your many
children's
occupations.
Books. I love it when people say you write books. It's like, yes, actually, I do. There's a Booker Prize, Nobel.
They're all books.
I'm in the conversation. no, I write picture books for little ones and I write for slightly older kids as well.
People write in different places. Some people prefer to write in offices. Some people prefer to go to places. Some people write in pubs. Is that something you've ever tried?
No. I'm not one of those. I'm amazed by these people. Who obviously you see it in like the members clubs, not that I'm a member, but like Soho House, you walk, everyone's got their laptop in, out, do you know what I mean? But you also see it in pubs and cafes is obviously a big one. You see people setting up with a million plugs and shit. Nowhere, I've never been able to work anywhere other than like a silent space that's just mine, no music. People walking around, glasses clinking. Mm. In a pub, you have like people that might be drunk. Yeah. I was like, stop pretending to fucking read that book, please.
Yeah. No, I can do that. I can
read a
book.
I need to have absolutely nothing going on in a pub to read a book.
I can work in a pub, but not if I'm drinking alcohol. Or I can, if I'm sometimes at the end of the day.
Thing, why would I be in a pub? Like, if I'm disguising it as work too much. This is to myself, but this is all about lying to myself.
Yeah.
I'm in a pub because secretly I want to have a beer.
Yeah.
There's no other reason to like break out your laptop in a pub.
Sometimes I find I'll be at the end of the day, I'll be in a pub, I'll get a beer or a glass of wine or something, work away, drink this, finish off my work. The next morning, open it up and delete everything I did. Absolutely. And go, that does not make any sense. Let's ignore that. So yeah, I think it's the alcohol for me rather than noise.
I might answer an email. Like end of the day, do you know what I mean? I finish what I'm doing. I might go, oh, you know what? I've actually got 7 emails.
Yeah.
5 of them actually need thinking about like properly. Go in a pub, order a beer, get them done before the beer hits me and then I'm on my own. Okay. That's the other thing, by the way. I love pubs. I frequent them, obviously, mainly in London, but all over the UK. No landlords. I have relationship because I go to so many.
Yeah.
Maybe hundreds, but I never have more than one beer.
Really?
Unless I'm, you know, like I'm going to the pub with people. Yep. Yeah. My relationship with pubs is really specific. I work and then on the way home from work, I have a beer.
Oh,
break the day up and then I go home. And that's it.
Yeah.
So like you could pluck a landlord out somewhere from the UK and they'll go, tell you who's in here. Tell you you're seeing here all the time. That Doc Brown, that that Ben guy, you know, off of the thing. The guy from the, you see him in it. See him in it. Oh, he must be like a big Johnny's in there. Yeah. Like, he's in there a lot. One beer.
He's gone. Beer off. Yeah.
And he always brings the glass back to the to the can.
That's good. Shows respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that. I think it's a nice thing to break up the day. Yeah, exactly. Put a little barrier between the working day and the home life. Yeah,
it's lovely. Yeah, it's like something to look forward to. You're not abusing the alcohol.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. If you're doing it every day and every day it's like 3 or 4 pints and you're out and you're a bit like,
yeah.
I just don't. I think people underrate the effects.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of alcohol. Like there's little things that you wouldn't even notice on 3 or 4 pints that you're never doing on 1 pint.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? 3 or 4 things. You might be like slightly short with somebody, or you might be you might send an email without reading the back what you've written. And then you read it back, you think that's foul, mate. Like you were saying, just delete it all. But if the email's already sent, you're like, I'm talking to a publisher. And it's just littered with spelling mistakes.
Yeah, so I have a no...
That's not happening on 1 pint.
I have a no client type thing, communication rule when I've started drinking. When my daughter was born, and it was a stressful time when you've got new child, and I was working out of an office at the time occasionally, and I would, making videos, and I would do editing. If I was editing in the afternoon, I would sometimes go, do you know what, I'll get a beer or get a bottle of wine or something and have a little bit of a drink in the afternoon, but my rule was I would never send anything I've done or have any communication with people. I'll do work that's can then been reviewed afterwards.
Boundaries.
Mm. Yeah. It's important.
Absolutely.
Okay, phones away, put a gag on Siri, it's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
Ben, do you like a pub quiz?
I do. I feel quite pressured in them. And I'm very judgmental of the people in my team. So I don't do it often. But there's a guy I know. My friend Justin, he's so good at pub quizzes that he just never loses. And he can change his team, like he'll, you know, to get this person, whoever's available.
Yeah.
And he'll do it at so many different pubs. But he's just, it's like he's unbeatable.
Yeah.
He wins a lot of money. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well,
some people got those brains, right?
Some people do,
general knowledge brains.
It's annoying when there's one always there that wins every time. Yeah. I think there should be pub quizzes just for ignorant people like me.
Mm.
Who don't know stuff, and so everyone's got a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I know a shitload, but I can't reach for the memories.
Yeah,
really struggle.
Well, Dan's going to give us a pub quiz now. Yeah. I don't know what it's about. I don't know anything about it. We will compete in a friendly manner, hopefully. Dan, what's your pub quiz about this week?
Well, this week, Ben, you've performed as Doc Brown in the past, and also you're a musician as well. And so what I thought we would do is a pub quiz about doctors in music.
Oh, I like that.
I like
slightly
that.
Wider than you might first think. Okay, so I'm going to give you 3 questions, but don't answer them now.
Okay.
Have a think, because this will be the end of the first part of the pod, and we'll do the answers in the second part.
Right.
And I'll repeat the questions for you. Okay. Question one. Which doctor is the singer referring to in these lyrics? Oh yeah, that man takes care of all of my pains and my ills. His name is blank in the morning. And taking care of business is really this man's gain. Okay.
Oh God.
Question two.
The fact that Ben's writing stuff down makes me worried about this.
Question two. Which doctor is the band leader of the Electric Mayhem? And question three. Who is André Rommel Young, better known as?
Okay. Okay, that brings us to the end of the first half of The Moon Underwater. For those of you who do not support The Moon Underwater on Patreon, if you'd like to subscribe, you can head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, access to The Moon Underwater Social Club on Facebook, and early access to live tickets. We'll see you soon in part two. We'll continue creating Ben's dream pub.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.